Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game. Here with me in studio, the man, the myth, the legend, my partner for the entire time, Weasel Wing!
Yeah, boy!
But not to be outdone, coming to us from Sumter County, where he is protecting the world, or at least the local area, from fires. Chris Rankin coming aboard via Skype. What's going on, Chris?
Not a whole lot, man. Just out here in the sticks where there's barely any cell phone signal out here. So hopefully I don't get dropped like twice like last time.
Yeah, well, I mean, hey, look, we know how to play hurt. We know how to handle business. It's what we do around here. I mean, heck, you had just gotten off a call that had been rerouted away from you. You almost didn't make the show, but apparently Sumter County sympathized with our situation. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm not trying. Look, we have enough false controversy to deal with here. More on that later. But, you know, it's just a whole lot of craziness. But, hey, we can't be stopped, gentlemen. Weasel got stuck at work because people having meetings that go to 6:45. What the expletive deleted is that expletive deleted?
Hey, what you got to do.
As much as I got onto you last week about being late, that crap made you a sympathetic character. I'm just trying to tell you, Weasel. Who does that?
Hey, that's why I got out of corporate America, man.
Yeah,
I can't. None of those meetings. If I've been there, done that before. Hey. You know, you've been in a meeting all day for 10 hours and for what? Nothing.
Hey, man. No, I got you there. I mean, you did a lot more than that to get there, too. It must have really ticked you off, Chris, because I know you lost over 100 pounds to get where you are now, fighting fires and all that other stuff. But pop quiz. Bigger corporate offense. Scheduling that late meeting that you know could possibly end at 6:45, or scheduling that noon meeting right in the middle of lunch. Weasel.
It was an engineer that I couldn't have a meeting otherwise, so he was giving me answers and stuff, so I had to get mine.
Well, so that's right. This is a pop quiz. You're trying to sympathize with the guy, but and maybe he indeed is not an evil person. I don't mean it like that. But bigger nuisance to the corporate world, the noon meeting.
It would
or
be
the
late one.
Meeting?
Would be the nuisance. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough, Chris.
Hey, can I get a little question first before that? What time did the meeting start by the time it ended at 6:45?
Ooh, that's a good question.
did it start at noon and go all the way to 6:45? Because I've been in a meeting like that before. That's
I think
what I'm saying.
It was like 5:45 or so.
I mean, okay, so, it's a so bolt. I would say the one going to 6:45 would be the worst.
Well,
because
at least
the one during the middle of lunch,
Chris,
you can usually eat while you go through the lunch. Then you can get back to work and get your shit done, so you don't stay there until 6:45.
Yeah, that's great that you wanted to go outside the question, but you forgot it's true or false, not dissertation. But we'll go ahead and go.
Well, that's which one. I said 6:45 is worse, so true then.
Okay, there you go. Ski gas, the late one. I'll put it this way. I'm gonna go with the midday one because I'm usually the guy who comes up late because he just found something that someone else broke during the day. So, I mean, I need time to find it. I don't know, but that's a biased situation. Anyways, well, I was hoping for something quick there, and it got bitter real fast. Somebody, Chris, do you have someone who can give you a hug over there, Chris? I'm just asking.
No, actually, I have a guy over here is probably going to stab me with a needle here soon because he's a paramedic student.
Oh.
So he needs to practice on getting IVs. So.
Well, that's intimate.
Probably going to stab me here in a little bit. So.
Fair enough. We'll leave that alone, my man. Right.
So far away from a hug, yes.
Far away from a hug. I could tell more awkward jokes, but we'll move on from there. Anyways, well, speaking of things that used to be awkward jokes, the Pro Bowl was this past weekend. And got to say, guys, I mean, I didn't get a chance to watch it this week myself. I was actually with my parents. They were celebrating their 40th wedding anniversary at the local German brew pub known as the Willow Tree Cafe. All three of us are very familiar with the awesome that is. And if you're in the area, go check it out. I'm trying to tell you. I think the only reason why Sanford, Florida exists is to house the Willow Tree, but I digress. But I did manage to check out some things about it. And first of all, the ratings and the number is still good. I mean, guys, look, I know it's an exhibition game. I know it's something no one cares about, quote, but the TV numbers say otherwise. I mean, you tell me, Weasel, who do you think got more views, the NHL All-Star Game or the Pro Bowl? Heck, a regular season baseball game and the Pro Bowl.
I think maybe like a baseball game would get more.
Actually, you, the numbers would completely disagree with you.
Oh.
Now, there may be certain choice games like Sox, Yanks, or anything like that that may take place that would beat it, but the number for the Pro Bowl is still huge, and not to mention Arizona, the Glendale area there, that stadium sold out at 63,000+. So, no one cares, but all that still happened. I mean, I'm just saying. So, but... you know, as far as all that, I mean, I know we've seen the video of the complete lackluster Pro Bowl stuff in the past, but I'll ask this question, and this could be whoever wants to field it. Do you think they're going with in the right direction with the Pro Bowl? I mean, are they? I feel like they kind of put it on life support to compare what it was, and it's starting to kind of walk on its own a little bit. I don't know. Weasel, you give me a face you're not quite buying.
Well, it's... The thing about the Pro Bowl for all these years is that when you have you're playing with your teammates, a lot of times you have three or four players on a team, and it's just people don't try hard. Like there were some of them where they were just, you know, letting everybody rush, and it was laid back. But for like Irvin's
Carter.
Carter.
Only the biggest Minnesota receiver of all time.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't know. All the names he forgets. He forgets Carter.
It's cool. He's showing respect. That's all.
Well, yeah, so.
Oh, okay. Well, so, yeah, with all that aside, I mean, people are calling it laid back. I'll tell you what, and granted, like I said, I didn't see the whole thing, but from what I watched, it didn't look like, you know, that like the Odell Beckham catch that was down the field. That dude laid the hell out for that. Now, granted, you may not be getting big hits or anything like that, but I don't know that the fans necessarily want to see the big hit in the Pro Bowl either. I mean, keep in mind, this is just a lip service, so the favorite players of the league can all be on the field at once, and the experience leading up to the Pro Bowl is cool. Like, I did watch the Pro Bowl draft. I thought that was fun as heck. I mean, how often do you see somebody get referred to as the neckbeard with an arm? I'm just saying. Which, by the way, guess who that was? You know. Yes, it was Andrew Luck. You're right, everybody. What's that?
Nothing.
Okay. So, I don't know. But with that aside, hey, at least in my case, Matt Stafford, who was the offensive MVP, was picked off by my favorite guy, who was the defensive MVP, J.J. Watt. So, that's more J.J. Watt love I can annoy you with. How about that?
You know, I'd like to see them come up with different captains, though. I mean, we had Chris Carter and Michael Irvin last year, had it again this year.
No.
I'd like to see, like, a defensive player. Like, as one coach and an offensive player on the other coach, who they draft, how they draft differently.
Oh, you mean Deion Sanders and Jerry Rice?
Because that's what it was last year?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so they did pick different. I thought it was Chris Carter and Michael Irvin.
No.
Well, they keep... Yeah, okay.
You just see their faces a lot because they're correspondents on ESPN and the NFL Network, so... No, but
right.
No.
I like to see more coverage of the Pro Bowl like they used to do. I mean, they used to do the... they used to have, like...
The skills
it's like
challenge.
Combines and,
yeah,
you know, have like bench reps and, you know, they put them through like gauntlets and everything like that, defensive line players going through it and everything like that. And, you know, you don't get the coverage anymore.
Yeah.
The Pro Bowl like it used to be.
Yeah. You mean like the old quarterback challenge or whatever? They would get the various games of skill, like, you know, the quarterback, they'd have the ball on a pedestal or a panel or some sort. I mean, you see what I'm talking about, right, Weasel? They put the ball there, they pick it up, and... It's got some sort of a chalk or something on the end of it, and they throw it at a target, and then, boom, you know, it leaves a mark on there. You know what I'm talking about.
It was
seen that.
It was pretty cool.
Right, and then they roll out, grab another ball, roll out, hit another, like a moving target downfield, grab another one, roll the other way, and stuff like that. But, you know, then that's for quarterbacks, and they got defensive line, you know, they have to go through, like, this, like kind of like through a sled, you know, hit the sled, go through, like, a low crawl, and go through that, like pass, like rush the passer and stuff like that.
Weasel?
Well, I remember the ones, those quarterback challenges. I remember back in the day.
Yeah.
And you have like guys like Boomer and stuff like that. It was pretty cool watching them. But now at times it's like you have like guys like Luck and Brady and stuff.
I mean,
so.
Dudes that could actually, you know, I mean, well, not Brady so much, but dudes that could actually run. I'd be very curious to see, you know, like you mentioned, Luck specifically. Hell, at this point, if Michael Vick's willing to do it, I'd like to see him run that course. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. But, yeah, bring back the skills challenges, damn it. I mean, you know, that's the one thing where, like, punters and field goal kickers could be cool, too. Like, you guys know how in the NHL, during that, they have the skills challenge where within the goal they have the targets, and they'll take shots to hit the targets within the goal. Why can't we do that with the goalpost? I'm just saying.
Yeah, that'd actually be kind of cool. I mean, even punting, they have like a punting challenge, have targets on the field.
Exactly. I mean, you know, that being said, the Pro Bowl did have something close to that where they did narrow the goalpost from the 18-feet standard to 14 feet. But Vinatieri did miss one, so I don't know if he's in favor of this concept moving forward. I'm just saying. Anyways, so... All right, well, let's go ahead and move off of the lighthearted here, gentlemen.
Real quick, we're just talking about the skills challenge. Did you hear about them talking about, like, a free agent combine now? You know, they have a combine for the college players coming out
right
for the draft. They have a combine. They're talking about doing a free agent combine, all the free agents that are in the NFL, so they're going to have a combine in, like, March.
You mean for current free agents
in the NFL, people that are on teams that are free agents, or, you know, that weren't on a roster last year that will be welcomed in to a combine. They're talking about having it in March so that teams can come over and see, you know, if these people stayed in shape and how they do on this combine with the free agent, you know, with some veteran players.
Current player. Wow.
Right.
I mean, look, maybe, I mean, I guess it sounds like a good idea on the surface, but if I'm a free agent player, like, let's say I'm a Jimmy Graham, what's my incentive to going to a combine and doing that? I have game film. Why do I need a combine? I guess this wouldn't be for, and Weasel, what you got there?
Are you saying that it's like if someone comes out of college as a senior, now if they don't get drafted, would they kind of do that? Would they go to that kind of program?
Oh, that's an interesting question, too. But no,
I'm saying,
think,
like, yeah, available free agents in the NFL right now.
I think Chris was saying that it's current players, yeah. But, I mean, that's an interesting point. You got guys that weren't drafted. Would they be eligible for this? I mean, I don't know about y'all, but if I'm a scout, I'd want, because, again, I can go look at film of former players. I could talk to guys who have coached or are coaching, I should say, you know, or look at film other places. I don't know a damn thing about these free agent guys. Yeah, sure, they're college, but that's not the same. I mean, what is it? They all say that the NFL is miles faster than the college game. How does looking cut college film necessarily help me as much? It's still a crapshoot, yeah. You know.
I think they're aiming towards, like, the players that are, like, on the scout teams. They're not the big name guys like the Jimmy Grahams and stuff like right. that for the free agents coming up. It's these other guys that some teams may not even know much about that are on scout teams, or maybe like a Kevin Smith that's been out of the NFL for a couple of years. You know, maybe he'll get it. You know, some teams are talking about him coming back. He had a couple
Russell.
Tryouts last year to go up to come back to the NFL. So stuff like that. You know, some players that had some NFL careers that are still a little young that they might have come up to the combine so other teams can see, you know, what kind of skills they have.
Hey, what do you think would do better in theaters? Showing Jamarcus Russell do this player combine, or that movie they did, Draft Day? I'm just throwing that out there. Anyways, I love silly stuff like that. No, I think it's just going to be too much of a risk factor. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they have the fitness test, but that's not actually testing skills. And I think you're right, Chris. It's something where it's for players who are trying to show something off. Like, I'll give an example, you know, the Sam Congados of the world, the Justin Forsetts of the world, to use a more current example. I don't know. I could see it going either way. I think you would only get guys doing it that would have something to gain out of it, though. I mean, of course, you could say that college players do that at the combine. I mean, how many Bridgewater didn't throw, I don't think, for example. He's not the only one, but there were a number of quarterbacks that didn't throw. Weasel.
Bridgewater, I'm pretty sure he did throw. I think he did pretty bad, and his kind of reason was he was throwing without a glove.
Which was lame.
Yeah, kind of lame. But, and then at Pro Day, I think he did throw with the glove and stuff, and he did, you know, he did really good, so.
And actually, you're right. He did throw. He didn't do some of the physical. Like, I don't know that he ran the 40 and all that kind of stuff. But he's not the only one. I'm not picking on him per se. He's just the guy that came to mind first.
Right. And there's going to be there's rumors that Marcus Mariota is not going to be throwing at the combine because he's had he got a shoulder injury in the national championship game.
Boy.
So he's going to try letting it heal. So he's not going to throw in the combine coming in April.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Mariota. Chris, and I'll go ahead and take a sideline on this just because I've heard so much talk about it, and I want to see if you guys think it's ridiculous as I do. But the Eagles have been talking a lot, specifically because the Chip Kelly connection, right? Oh, he used to coach in Oregon, blah, blah, blah. And there's been a lot of talk. I even saw some ridiculous headline out there that said Marcus Mariota is on Chip Kelly's speed dial. I'm like, what? Why do I care if that is true or is it even whatever? The point is this. There's been a lot of people speculating that they're going to sell the farm draft pick, that they could sell the farm draft pick wise, say, as you like to bring up, Weasel, with RG3 and the skins, right? In that fashion, to get the pick, to pick Marcus Mariota. Let's take the shoulder injury off the table for a minute. Chris, I'll start with you. Is that a good plan?
Well, I mean, if you look, what is it, the Bucks got the first pick, correct?
That's right.
The Buccaneers have the first pick of the draft, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and so if you're looking, they need a quarterback. You know, it's not McGowan, it's not Glennon. They need a quarterback under there. You're looking. You said it before. None of these quarterbacks are all that great coming out this year. So, if the Eagles came up to you and trade you first, you know, for your first round pick, give you Nick Foles and the next 2 years first round draft picks, if you're the Bucs. You know, if you swap first round picks this year and then you get the Eagles first and second, first next year and first the year after, would you take it? Because you know what Nick Foles can do. I mean, yeah, granted, he was injured this year. But nothing, I think, wasn't it like a leg injury?
I think you're right, yes.
So, I mean, you know what Nick Foles can do there. So, I mean, if you're the Bucs, would you take someone that you know that you have NFL game film on and code? To a quarterback that's not even going to fit in the Lovie Smith system.
Well, I mean,
if they're selling that, I mean, I could see the Bucks maybe jumping on it a little bit. I mean, it depends also what else they're offering. So,
true.
I mean, for the Eagles to get Marcus Mariota and then they got LeSean McCoy, I mean, that's going to be a dangerous backfield back there in the back.
Where are the Eagles picking?
Right now, I mean, it's going to be middle of the pack. I mean,
I think they're around the 20 range.
Yeah.
Now, Mariota, he's supposed to go, like, what, top five or top 10?
Well, they're talking about him going pretty high. Yeah, I mean, there's a speculation he could go top three even. But
that's a big jump then.
Right, exactly. And then that's what I'm getting at. Chris is saying two picks in Nick Foles. I don't think that would be a good enough price tag because the Bucks will be like, screw you, gay. Foles, that's all you got? I think they would try to leverage for a different veteran player, maybe perhaps a D'Amico Ryans, a Connor Barwin, a Trent Cole, because it ain't like they're doing great on defense either, guys. You know, just throwing that out there right quick.
The thing about the Bucks is that I don't think Glennon's the answer, but
right.
The thing about it is that they need to, if they have a player like that they rate high, at especially the quarterback position, If they believe in the guy, they have to take him. I think because the thing is you're just going to go on through another year with Glennon and nothing really to fortify the future at the quarterback position. So it's risky. But if a team does offer like a trade that the number five overall pick Redskins moved up to number two,
right?
And they gave up, I think it was like three first round draft picks and a
it
second
was
round
a
draft
ton.
Pick.
Now, granted, they had they happened to be in a position to have a surplus of picks, but you're right, they threw the world at them.
That was five to two. Yeah. Now, if you're up in the like the double digits, like 10 or like 15, and you try to get to like up to the top five, it's a lot.
Well, you're right. I get where you're going, and that's very, like, if you look at just number-wise from this pick, that makes a lot of sense. But keep in mind, Mariota and Winston are not Luck and RG3. You see what I'm saying? So, intrinsically, that first-round pick is going to have less value because of who you could get with it. It's like a weakening of the currency. You know, I'll get nerdy on it for a minute. You know, if you weaken the dollar, you can buy less with that dollar. So because that dollar, quote, is weakened, or draft pick is weakened in value because there's nobody really worth snagging like a Luck or an RG3 was perceived at the time, they might be able to get away with it. But two spots is obviously far less. Or excuse me, was it two spots or was it three spots? Three spots. Three spots is significantly less than at least 15, which is probably more. Actually, Chris said it was in the 20s, so there you go.
I think best case scenario would be Bucks to trade back. Most likely it'll be with a team in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get, if it's a quarterback, they get the quarterback they want.
Well, and again, what if you're in the Bucks front office and both of these rookie quarterbacks you feel you can get no more out of than Mike Glennon? I mean, it may not be popular, but the move may be to get that offensive line back. The move may be to go other places more essential to the club. At this point, I got to be honest, I don't think that Mariota and Winston should even be drafted in the first round, and I don't think the Bucks should make that mistake. They should use that pick for somebody who's going to be a longer-term investment, and more often than not, gentlemen, that is a lineman. I mean, right? That's a guy who could play on the squad for a decade and not necessarily be a drain on your cap long-term. I don't know. I mean, I'll say this at least. If they go the Mariota direction like that, it's a die roll. It's a risk. And Chip Kelly will have cemented his fate. He'll either look like a damn genius or like a bum.
What was the team that traded up for a quarterback from USC? I think it was from the number 15 or so. And they traded up to number about 5 or 6. And that team would be the Philadelphia Eagles. They traded up to get Mark Sanchez. It was...
it wasn't the Eagles. It was the Jets.
Yeah, because Sanchez started out with the Jets.
Yeah, that's it.
You got the Jets.
They got the green and white. It was the Jets. They moved up from like, it was from like 15th. It was to 8th or 9th.
Yeah, it was still up there.
Yeah, it was a significant jump. Granted, not, you know, 18 to 20 picks, but still a significant jump. I mean, this would be the caliber. It wouldn't be quite RG3, as you mentioned. This is going to be pretty close to like what Ditka did to get Ricky Williams, for example, kind of thing, right? And is Mariota worth that leap? I don't think so. And on top of this, soldier surgery is now, Weasel, that you bring into it. I can't possibly fathom that that's a good plan. I don't know. But then again, compared to you guys and a lot of stuff, I'm a lot more conservative in my approach. So, I mean, I wouldn't have rolled these dice with... without the shoulder surgery, let alone with. I don't know. So, anyways, interesting.
Yeah. And I was right. The Eagles were 20th. I just looked it up.
See, that's from the hip 20th pick. See, and that's, we're not even concentrating on the draft yet. We're nailing it like that. It's called talent, Chris. I'm trying to tell you. By the way, speaking of concentrating on the draft, NGSCSports.com opening up their draft center. So hit the draft center tab. Check out a whole lot of awesome there. We just debuted that this past weekend. So if the Super Bowl doesn't interest you for whatever reason, regardless of your leanings therein, check out the site. You'll go ahead and get a whole lot of draft awesome there at the hands of, so far, from Montel Hardy and Josh Zimmer. Weasel, what do you got to add, brother?
Just we'll finish up your stuff.
No, I was done. You're good.
Yeah, I looked up some stuff about the trade that the Jets made. And it says they moved from 17 down to the 5th position.
Right.
And what they got was New York. They got a first and second round pick and 3 players. A Kenyon Coleman, Brett Ratliff, and Abram Elam. So that's a pretty big jump. So
yeah,
that's what most likely would be what the Eagles would be looking at. So
I mean, long term, you can say that was a bad move now, but it's a move that got them to 2 AFC championships. So whatever. I mean, as much as you could defend, it wasn't Sanchez that got them there. Maybe not, but he at least did.
It wasn't Mark Sanchez. It was Thomas Jones.
Of course. But like I'm trying to say, he at least did enough to keep him on the rails. Now, You know, I think Sanchez used to have the very adequate excuse that as they pulled Thomas Jones away from him, Santonio Holmes, various other individuals, that he had nobody to work with. And I believe that for a minute. It made sense. I didn't necessarily subscribe to it like some sort of gospel, but it made sense. I think now his struggles with the Eagles this past season, though, when he did come in for Nick Foles, is going to make Chris's statement of Thomas Jones look even more correct. I'm just saying.
the first game he played for the Eagles, I was like, oh, look how Mark Sanchez did and everything like that. And I was like, dude, who was it against?
The Titans, exactly.
So I'm like, it's like, you know, calm down. It's Mark Sanchez.
And then what happened when they played against the Packers? Yeah, about that, you know. So all legitimate points, man. I mean, heck, if Big TJ were listening now, he'd be like, of course Mark Sanchez is trash. I can't get my voice that low to imitate Big TJ. I'm not even going to try. So, but, yeah, there you go. Anyways, before we go into break, let's go ahead and at least get started on this story. You know, we've been having fun with it, but now to get a little bit more serious. Josh Gordon, ladies and gentlemen, all the news in Cleveland about players partying too much has surrounded Johnny Manziel. Johnny Manziel has not been arrested for anything or done anything against the law, per se. There have been, you know, implications where he was at somewhere where cops might have been involved or whatever, but he's not been guilty of anything, quote-unquote, per se. However, there is a teammate of his that's in the news again. Perhaps you remember what happened to Josh Gordon last year. What was it? He ended up getting suspended for 10 games.
Well, it was originally a year suspension.
Right.
And then it was brought down to 10 games.
Yeah, that's how I was going to say. This is 10 games down from a year. We were going to say the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You just did it different than I did. But hey, at any rate, after being a Rookie of the Year candidate with leading receiving yards and craziness his rookie year, he goes out, gets himself suspended for a year, and then after a change in the policy down to 10 games like Weasel said. Also, at that point, he was already a repeat offender. I mean, I know if I had Weasel do his thing and go out of bounds, he could go and find all sorts of stuff from colleges and things like that. I know we've talked about it before. So the point is, stop doing stuff. Seems pretty obvious. Well, apparently not. Due to the fact that Josh Gordon is at the status that he is with the NFL and the suspensions, something else he gets tested for regularly is also alcohol use. Well, he has failed an alcohol test. That's the way they're putting it. I mean, I guess I've seen all sorts of different things on like shows and stuff with breathalyzers connected to like things in your house or to the ignition of your car, things like that. But with this positive testing for alcohol, he's now in position to miss the entire 2015 season. Guys, I mean, aside from the obvious, dude, what are you doing statements that we could all make, the impact to the Browns is got to be huge here. I mean, they were looking, in the first half of the season last year, they were looking like they were going to do well. They were moving in the right direction. Brian Hoyer was leading them well. Then he started to trail off. Josh Gordon came back. It didn't seem to matter. All sorts of craziness is going on. And now it just seems to have continued from the season into the offseason now that this craziness continues. Impact for the Browns. I mean, Chris, what exactly do you do at this point?
They need, if they want to invest more in the Josh Gordon, they need to go get him help. They need to check him in to some kind of place, because you got to realize he was a week 17 scratch because he missed team meetings and everything as well. He was a healthy scratch for the last game of the season.
That's true.
So there's something wrong. I don't know, with his head or what. He needs to get away from football, and he needs to go take care of this. And if the Cleveland Browns want him as a player and they're still going to invest in him and everything, they need to make sure he goes get this done. I mean, if you look back at Brandon Marshall a few years ago with all his domestic violence issues with him and his wife when they were down in Miami and everything like that, he checked himself up in Boston, a behavioral center, for 2 months to get fixed. And, I mean, you haven't heard anything from him since then, because he saw his, you know, career going down because of this. So he went and got his seeked help for his, you know, behavior issues. Now he's like a spokesman for the, you know, mental behavior.
I think
he has the awareness and everything. He pays the fines every year because he wears the green shoes that week or whatever. So he got his help. Josh Gordon needs to go get his. He needs to realize that, you know, that if he wants to play football, football's his life, then he's not going to have that because he's doing so much other stuff to ruin his football life. So, like I said, if it's the Browns and you want to invest, if you want Josh Gordon still as your player, because realistically he's helped you better than having him go to some other team, like New England will take him in a heartbeat. So I'd say they need to try to help him get into like a rehab center or something, try to get him fixed so that in 2016 that he's, you know, able to come back or whatever.
Weasel.
Oh, I was just saying with the Brandon Marshall, I believe it was something like personality.
He was actually diagnosed with I don't know.
It was a mental behavior disorder.
Right.
Is what it came down to.
Yeah.
Behavior. So it's a.
Yeah. So he was having problems with it, but he's definitely on the right track. So.
Well, Brandon Marshall is, yeah, and this is what Josh Gordon's got to watch for himself. I mean, he basically has two choices. He could be a Brandon Marshall, or he could be a Titus Young. And I don't really think there's a middle ground on that, you know. I don't know that the Browns can keep him at this point, per se. Because the thing you said about they need to get him help, they need to get involved with him, were things that we all said last year. And I was a member of that troop. But at this point now, Josh Gordon's made it pretty clear that even with the help, he just don't care so much. I don't know. This is such a tricky thing because sometimes what people need is the support and sometimes what they do need is the kick in the butt. And, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and profess, you know, oh, they need to kick him square in their pants. He's been stupid, yada, yada, yada. I don't know a thing about the situation. Maybe that would be the worst possible thing for him. I don't know. But that being said, I mean, it's possible that being out of the league a couple years is the best move. You know, do your thing, serve your time, so to speak, and get right. There's a number of examples of players that do that and end up having semi-successful careers and making money to where they can move on with their lives. I don't know. I don't know. I got to be honest here. I really don't know what the right answer for Josh Gordon and the Browns are. It's just a real quagmire all the way around. I'm just saying. Anyways, on that joyful note, we'll go ahead and hit a break here. We'll be back shortly. You're listening to The Student of the Game on NGSC Sports. Well, you can tell everybody. Yeah, you can tell everybody. Go ahead and tell everybody. And we are back here at NGSC Sports. I'm Kyle Nash, the student of the game, here with the one and only Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
And, of course, Chris Rankin from Sumter County doing his thing. Apparently, he's not been called in yet. Thank goodness for that. So we could talk all the football awesome we need to. And, of course, guys, there's this little thing that's happening this weekend. Maybe you've heard of it. The Supper Bowl? Supper Bowl? Supper Bowl? Super Bowl! Right. That. Patriots. Seahawks. Craziness ensues. Guys, I don't know about you all, but I think by accident we have a whole lot of, lacking a better word, history wrapped in this game that's a complete accident, right? Pete Carroll being a former Patriots coach. Richard Sherman being a former teammate of Brandon Browner. Richard Sherman and Darrelle Revis being the center of debates as to who's the best corner. We're going to walk through all of them, But guys, which do you think, which is the most interesting of those whole situations? Or am I missing one that's even cooler? Weasel, let me ask you first.
With like matchups or what?
Just stories of past involvement, you know, leading up to the Super Bowl.
All right, I got one. Okay, so we got...
Oh, he got the paper out. He's ready to do this.
You're going
to
go back to 2012.
All right.
So the Patriots played the Seahawks.
Yes.
They had, of course, Patriots, Tom Brady.
Now, keep in mind, this is the regular season. I think it's week three?
Something like that.
It's early in the season. I forget what week it is.
And so, yeah, they played, and there were these Tom Brady... There were two players that weren't very known at the time. It was Richard Sherman and safety Earl Thomas.
Oh, those guys.
So... He called them, I think, like a no-name type of thing. And
I believe he referred to them as nobodies, yes.
As
alleged by Richard Sherman.
And then that he should come by and after they win to see Brady, you know? So what happened was...
Yeah, just to put a little bit more on that, too. So, you know, they're jawing and says, and then at the time the Seahawks were up, I think maybe a field goal, something like that. And Brady says to him, why don't you come back and see me after we win? Continue.
So the Seahawks won 24-23, and there is a picture that went on the internet of Sherman jawing off onto the side of off to Brady, and the words, I think it was later added by the internet, is, you mad bro.
I think he actually dropped that on him, too, in real life. It's not just the meme, but in Richard Sherman's defense, Tom Brady said come see him. I think it was just being respectful to the veteran quarterback. That's all. I mean, am I wrong?
Well, the thing is right now is that, I guess 3 years later, Sherman is seen as one of the best cornerbacks in the league. Earl Thomas is at safety. He's pretty good in their game.
Absolutely.
But about the Super Bowl is that will Brady stay away from Sherman? Will he try to test him? Sherman does have I think his elbow... he did have an elbow injury two weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. And so how he's going to be, don't know. And even Earl Thomas, he has a shoulder injury.
Correct.
So how he attacks them, because he's got, you know, great wide receivers and stuff. But it's just, do you go at him? And because I think they're still going to have hate between the two sides. So how Brady responds, because people stay away from Sherman, sometimes get it to him. But this has a little bit of more emotion to it. So
sure.
That's what I think will be very interesting.
I don't know. Chris, why don't you weigh in on that real quick first? Because I have a response, but I want to see if you're going to say what I will. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you line up Gronk over Sherman and just let him go at it.
That's another thing. That's a thought. Split out Gronk and see what happens.
Yeah.
That's a good plan.
See what happens. Have Gronk one on one with Sherman. And you were talking about the matchups earlier. The one-on matchup I want to see is Vince Wilfork and Marshawn Lynch.
Oh boy,
that's the matchup I'm looking forward to.
That's a good answer.
You got beast mode to go against the guy that has his own zip code.
So, what is it? The world's fastest immovable object. Hell yes.
Right. So that's the matchup I want to see.
you know, I can't blame you with that. There's not a past history quote there per se. I like how you brought Sherman in there too. It's not that I forgot about the you mad bro situation, but hey, that certainly fits the confines of what I'm saying. I'm very curious to see how this gets played out throughout the week with media days and things like that, because the players are just arriving in Arizona today, and already Richard Sherman's getting questions about, oh, you said you were the best corner. Do you still think you're the best corner? And basically goes to the journalist. Let's put it this way. You know it. I know it. And I say you, as whoever you are listening to this program, you and I both know that media at the Super Bowl is just baiting these guys to say something that they can hype up about and let the story write itself. Richard Sherman, also apparently abundantly aware of this fact. Reporter asks him, do you still think you're the best corner in the game? You've said it before. He goes, I don't answer preschool questions. Okay. Basically telling the reporter that he's not falling for the trap.
I think his degree, I think it was in communications.
Thank you, Weasel. Good at it.
The guy is
Stanford.
The guy is, yeah, very smart, and like the way he studies the game, and he's very meticulous. He could, like, for a lot of the ways you line up, he may know already what you do, And but yeah, he's a little bit loud spoken too, but yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with being outspoken.
Oh no.
Oh no, no. And you mentioned him being sharp. Look, I mean, I interviewed the guy. He's definitely got his head on his shoulders. You know, yeah, I can't put it any better than that. But then after go ahead, Chris.
No, I was gonna say, you gotta remember he was a receiver in college.
Yes.
So switching from receiver to corner, I mean, it kind of helps out as an advantage because you already know what the receiver is going to be doing because you played the receiver. He played the receiver for his life. I mean, played secondary too as well before he went into college because he was just an athlete. So with the receiver, you always see receivers do well transferring over to corners. You don't see corners transferring well over to wide receiver, see Devin Hester.
Well, moreover, how many quarters have you seen transition over to the receiver spot? It doesn't really seem to happen all that much. Other than Troy Brown, I've never seen that's a receiver becoming a quarter. I had it backwards. But we could point to Troy Brown playing defense well. The Patriots were running out of corners profusely that year. He comes in and gets 3 interceptions on the year as a corner. I guess they tried to test him and they failed. But, you know, I like where all you guys are going there. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I mean, we say receivers and corners. I mean, you know, we're all UCF alum and everything, watch UCF. Brandon Marshall, his junior year in college, he was forced to play secondary and he led the team in interceptions.
Okay.
So, I mean, the transition for receiver to corner, I mean, it's there. So.
All right.
With that, it's easy for the corner like Richard Sherman to, you know, have the success he's had early on because he knows kind of the stance receivers take, their cuts, and everything like that because he played it for his life.
So he's got the physical in the size. He's over 6 foot. He's got, right. And he's a pretty big guy. He's got the speed, and now he's got the mental aspect, pulling that Sun Tzu art of war, know thy, keep your enemies close. Logic to it. Hey man, I'm not going to front on any of that. We were talking about, you know, testing Sherman. Chris says split Gronk out. I would even add an element to it. Let's test them both. Let's split Gronk out if we're the Patriots and then do those short dump screen passes to say a LeGarrette Blunt. So then you're testing Gronk blocking Sherman wide outside. Or testing Sherman with Gronk blocking him wide outside. And then having Earl Thomas try to tackle LeGarrette Blunt. That'll test you real fast.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the things. The thing to talk about is Gronkowski. Because the guy is, I think he's 6'6". And
a small man.
Yeah, 6'6", 265 pounds.
Good Lord.
But the guy's he has ridiculous, you know, physical ability. So,
I think the word athlete comes to mind. Yeah.
The who's going to guard him? Are they going to have someone that's going to just shadow him and say, "You shut this guy down," type of thing? Because Sherman is 6'3", and Earl Thomas and Chancellor. Chancellor, it's strong safety. He's 6'3". He's 232. So, how are they going to guard Gronk? It'll be an interesting way because everybody knows how good the guy is.
I agree.
So
with the Seahawks, what they're going to try to do is they're going to take him out. They're going to have Bobby Wagner underneath, and they're going to have Cam Chancellor over the top.
There's also talk that they'll isolate Earl Thomas with him as well someplace. Basically, guys, let's be honest. The best way to do it is to give them multiple looks. I will grant that. Because if you start getting consistent, they'll notice it. They'll find something to test it. For example, let's say you park Richard Sherman on him. Guess what? They're just going to use body-up plays and short stuff. It ain't going to matter. Then you bring up Bobby Wagner. They're just going to send Gronk over the top of you. Okay. Now, granted, like you said, the safety's supposed to help with that, but that doesn't do a damn thing for the seam necessarily. I say all that to say this. What really is interesting, and Chris, you mentioned Vince Wilfork. What about the Seattle Seahawks side? That defensive line, Cliff Averill. Brandon Mebane is out, but that's still a strong front with Malcolm Smith, Bobby Wagner, like you mentioned. Just a great talent of guys. Chris Clemens.
Chris Clemens isn't there anymore. Chris Clemens is in Jacksonville.
Oh, right. He's one of the guys that left. That's right. He's one of the ones in Seattle South. Excuse me. Whatever. The point is, Michael Bennett. That's who I meant. Right. I got it mixed up. The point is this. That's funny. Michael Bennett used to be in Florida, and then is it? But I put Chris Clem at whatever. That's a whole twisted thing. I say all that to say this, though. That front is still pretty solid. And with the internal line situation that the Pats have right now, granted, they've gelled pretty well. They did pretty good against the Ravens. But I don't see them on the offensive line anyway having any better a situation than Peyton Manning had in front of him before that debacle that happened last year. However, I said specific to the offensive line. Guys, what's different for the Patriots squad than the Broncos squad last year? Gronk. They don't have a big target in Denver. And Gronk ain't just a big target. He's a big target that can move like a beeline. And I think we're all saying it correctly that he's going to be the biggest problem. That offense needs to go through Gronk. And then once everybody's brought up to concentrate, you know, Maxwell, the other corner in Seattle, he's going to be tested with either an Edelman, a LaFell, something like that. Overall, the Pats have to try to find balance. If the Pats are even remotely successful running the football, this is going to be a closer game. Actually, that could be lead to the recipe of a runaway if Russell Wilson goes out and did what he did in the conference championship Sunday game. But let me ask you guys this. Do you feel like the conference championship Sunday game for the NFC exposed the Seahawks and gave Belichick something to work with? Weasel, I'll ask you first.
I don't think so. The Seahawks defense, I think they had a rough beginning, but it's like that team as that defense compared to last year, I think there weren't many changes. So a lot of it was they had returning players. So it's been two seasons. Like the thing is that I don't think they're gonna it's gonna make a big difference. Okay. So
I'm gonna go a little Bill Lumberg on you. Yeah, I'm gonna have to disagree with you a little bit there. 16-0 was the best the score got to be at some point in favor of the Packers. This is involving four turnovers by the Packers. Four interceptions and a lost fumble by Doug Baldwin on a kickoff return. The Seahawks defense did their job, in my opinion. I could see where you came out. You say they came out slow and that the Packers were able to score a touchdown pretty quickly. That's cool. But
they actually didn't score a touchdown quickly. They kicked two field goals when I said they should have gone for a touchdown.
Yeah, you're doing there. That again.
So, I mean, they took them a little while to score the touchdown.
We're back to those touchdown attempts again. Dang it.
Well, one thing about the thing about the defense is that there were, I think, five total turnovers, I'm pretty sure,
yes,
in that game. And you're going up against one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And after five turnovers, they get 6 points. Yeah,
that's what I'm getting at. Exactly.
So, I mean, that defense, yeah. I mean,
The Packers defense isn't all that in a bag of chips. You don't need to stop him. You slow Marshawn Lynch, then you got a problem. Okay? Well, if you're the Seahawks, you have a problem. And it's not necessarily a slam on Russell Wilson, though I do find him overrated. I'm not going to hide behind that. Let's be clear. This awesome, excellent, fantastic pass to Jermaine Kearse shouldn't have even happened. This is the Raheem Moore play for Manning and the Ravens 2 years ago. Actually, you could pick multiple ones. The onside kick by Brandon Bostic. I can't say his name. Excuse me. There's that. Then on top of that, what about that 500 ball?
Russell Wilson threw.
Yeah, to two-point Luke conversion. Wilson. You said Wilson. That threw me off for a minute. I meant the other Wilson. But yeah, you're right. Russell Wilson threw a 500 ball. You're right. And there's no reason for that to have scored. So without at least those two miracles, we don't get to see Russell Wilson save himself. That's just truth. Russell Wilson's not necessarily had great games in Conference Championship Sunday in the past. What do you mean? Sure, they beat the 49ers. Russell Wilson didn't have a great game. Marshawn Lynch did. But Russell Wilson, not so much. I think it's going to be a situation where the Patriots are going to try to smother Marshawn Lynch. That's what you do. That's how you do it. You dare Doug Baldwin and Jermaine Kearse to beat you on the outside, which against Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner, I don't think that's going to happen. And you test Luke Wilson versus a Rob Ninkovich or a Patrick Chung. I ain't feeling that either, guys. Got to tell you. So it's down to Russell Wilson running. And at that point, it'll be the Patriots front that's tested. And if the scheme is right and their aim is true, they have a shot. However, Seahawks defense doing their job is what's going to make that all interesting and compelling and stuff. I don't know. But let me ask you guys this, and I want to go to this angle too real quick. Is it a situation, I know we talked about Deflategate a little bit in the past, but let's say the Patriots win the Super Bowl. Is that going to tarnish anything? Is that going to change anybody's mind? I don't know. Weasel.
I got to look up the veteran player. I think it's a retired player. And he pretty much, I think it was, not Chris Carter, but I'm going to have to look it up.
Okay.
But
I could throw it to Chris real quick if you essentially quickly need to do that.
He said the quote that it's going to have an asterisk next to it. So.
Oh, I did hear that. I forget who it was, but yeah. I don't know if it was Ray Lewis or what, but yeah, no. And that could be. I don't know. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it is. I mean, if you look, the Deflategate and everything, I mean, with the balls and everything, the Colts would have lost anyway.
Exactly.
Oh, what the big deal is. The Colts have said, you know, they got outplayed, which they did. I mean, you can't go wrong. It doesn't matter if they would have had freaking a completely flat ball that he didn't even need to throw the ball because they were just outplayed. And, I mean, even with that, the Colts have their own balls they use, which were inflated to the right pressure anyway. So you can't say, we're not used to the deflated ball because the Colts had their own balls over there that weren't all deflated.
Oh, I'm not...
Otherwise, because they would have said something, they're like, why is this ball a little flatter? Because you can tell 1 to 2 pounds difference. And, I mean, even if they had balls where, they're pressurized inside and then they were left out overnight outside, they could lose a pound of pressure leaving outside in that cold 20-degree weather.
Hmm. I don't know about an entire pound, but they would definitely lose some. I mean, I don't know. Well, it's you mentioned, like, I've never heard anybody saying that the Colts were claiming that, they weren't used to or anything like that. All the Colts testimony sides with you that they didn't know the difference. And I mean, both Pro Bowler, Pro Bowl players, DeQuell Jackson and Mike Adams, there were other Colts Pro Bowlers on the squad actually, but ESPN talked to DeQuell Jackson, damn it, and Mike Adams. I got them mixed up. They both had the attitude. They both had picks in games against the Colts during this season, one in the playoffs, one in the regular season. Neither of them knew the difference. And DeQuell Jackson even said, look, I want to go on record. I didn't point that out. I just made the play. I just gave it to the equipment manager. I don't know what, deflated balls? What? No. No. And can we have, really quick, with all this talk of deflated balls and soft balls throughout the week, how many times I've resisted the that's what she said joke? I'm just saying. But that aside, I mean, the Colts players themselves have made it a big deal to say, hey, look, we're not tracing that to the reason why we lost the game. Hell, the problem was remedied during the second half, and that's when the Pats scored most of their points. That all being said, and this is going to be a question until it's answered, obviously. Profound stuff I just said right there. It's not so much about the Colts game at this point. The question being asked, well, there's two main questions. If you did it there, did you do it in the past? And if you didn't think you were cheating, why were you hiding it? If you didn't think it could get you advantage, why were you doing it? Now, I say all that too. Let's be clear, before all the Patriots fans start blowing me up, I think this is stupid. All right. I don't get the benefit, but there's former NFLers all over the place. You know, I've heard references to the former center of the greatest show on turf with the Rams say that it makes all the difference. I've heard other players say it makes no difference. It's all over the gate. I've heard things about, you know, Brad Johnson paying ball boys to manipulate the ball, not deflate them, but rough them up because, you know, they're new balls, so they wanted to scuff them up and all that. And now I'm talking about scuffed balls and setting myself up for more jokes. Great. But I don't know how much different deflating the ball is. Heck, allegedly, there was a sports science episode out there that said it didn't make a difference. I don't know. But
the only thing I can make a difference with, I think, because I've thrown footballs around before, is throwing the ball outside of it gets a little difficult when it's deflated a little bit because you're squeezing more. But catching the ball, I think it'd be easier.
That's true, and that's true. I mean, because
then you got a little more squeeze in there instead of a full inflated ball. So I think there's not really much advantage because I think throwing the ball is a little harder with a flatter ball when you grip it. It doesn't come out of your hand as smooth. But then for receiving-wise, I think that's where the advantage comes into play.
Well,
especially when it's cold, your fingers are numb, you just get that little extra, you know, you can get that little extra squeeze in there to secure the ball.
I'm resisting the urge to make the joke.
I'm on your side. I'll throw the Patriots under the bus as much as I can. I hate frickin' Boston teams, Philly teams, but I agree with you. It's who cares? It's, you know, he dove down into that, you know, try to get that little advantage that Belichick does all the time. But I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, the Colts got blown out. It wasn't because of the balls. You know?
Bingo. So
and we can just stop talking about Tom Brady's deflated balls because, I mean, he is married to Giselle. So, I mean, I'd have deflated balls too if I was married to her. So
pop quiz. One word answer or less, which basically means one word answer. True or false? We're only talking about Deflategate because the Patriots at one point participated in Spygate. Weasel.
It's a yes.
Chris.
True.
All the way around. I agree. All right, guys. We got about 2.5 minutes left in the show. It's time to do it one last time this season. Yeah, I know. Chris is already the champion, whatever. But Weasel's going for that playoff record win.
I'll take it.
By the way, in a show where we're talking about deflated balls, do not use the phrase, I'll take it. I'm just saying. Chris, what do you got for the Super Bowl?
All right, we got the Seahawks and the Patriots. You know, this is, what, the sixth time the Patriots in the last 14 years?
Something like that.
Third time for the Seahawks. The Patriots, they won their first three. They lost the last two. The last two they lost, of course, against my Giants. Giants have a good defense. The other teams they beat were the Rams, who didn't really have a defense. Panthers, and they had Javon Kearse then. And then also the Eagles, who didn't really have a defense as well.
Wait, you're going to bring this up the time, Panthers and not talk about Julius Peppers? Come on, bro.
Yeah, Julius Peppers there too. So, I mean, but Javon Kearse was a freak. That's what they called him.
Exactly.
Because of just how fast he ran like a 4.3 40. Their defense was good. It was decent, but not as good as the Giants defense has been in the two Super Bowls they won, and then also how good the Seahawks defense is. But, okay, you know, I'm kind of stalling because I'm still just trying to decide who I'm trying to pick on this one. I think I'm going to go with the Patriots. I think Belichick is going to dig down into that rule book and try to find like a kind of like a gray area that he could try to get that little advantage of. If they are going to shut down Marshawn Lynch, they're going to make Russell Wilson try to beat him. And then also what the Patriots do is once they get a lead, they're not going to let off the gas and they're just going to keep tacking it on. They'll find what works and they'll go through that way. So if they get a lead early, it's going to be the Patriots all the way.
You know,
I'm going to go with the Patriots.
So something that's been consistent throughout the Patriots in their Super Bowl appearances is offensive line performance has affected their success therein. Also, defensive performance. They got a good defense this year. I'm still not convinced of that offensive line. And the last time we saw a weak offensive line situation, the Broncos got blowed the hell up. That all being said, the Patriots have Gronk. We said it earlier. I like where that's going. The Patriots have, oh, wait a minute, their receiver corps is kind of garbage. Meh. Aside from the fact I picked them on September 1st, and I just think their defense is that awesome, Russell Wilson will be put in a situation to where he just doesn't have to screw up all that often. I have the Seahawks. I predicted the repeat. Who am I to slink away now? Weasel, wrap it up.
I think it's I was thinking about it, and it's like the Patriots, they're the past. They have problems with the Giants. Two losses. They're not playing the Giants this time. So, based upon, I'd say, the Patriots... their offense. I think they're going to have some success.
Hold on, Chris. Whatever you're doing, stop it.
Well.
Thank you. Weasel.
So anyway, the offense, I think New England, I think they're going to do pretty good. Seattle is the lowest team that gives up the amount of points.
The lowest points allowed, right.
Yeah. So I am going to go with the Patriots on this one.
So the Seahawks are good enough, the least amount of points. I'm taking the Patriots.
And the cornerback, both sides have great corners. The
both
cornerback
sides have good secondaries. I agree.
And so the thing about that is that the corners for, well, the receivers for Brady, I think he's got a lot of talent around there. The Seahawks, though,
not
they're
going to
be lined
much.
Up with Revis and stuff like that. You got to stop Doug Baldwin. So, and one thing was, last week, Doug Baldwin was, I think he was targeted 5 times. I think 4 of them were.
That's Jermaine Curse, you're thinking.
Jermaine Curse, okay.
But even still, 4 of them were interceptions.
Him too. Yeah, so.
Well, of the 6 targets, 4 interceptions, 1 incompletion, and 1 catch that just happened to win the football game. One catch that shouldn't have even happened because of the number of freaking mishaps that handed the Seahawks the game.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
So,
that's another reason I'm going with the Patriots because, I mean, if you look just last few weeks, I mean, with the Lions get that against the Dallas got that call. I mean, yeah, the Lions had chances to win the game still, but they blew it. And then the Dez Bryant catch with the Packers, and the Packers had a lead. You know, this is like one thing after another. It's kind of like take its toll again, I believe. So that's why I'm going with Patriots.
But the refs didn't have anything to do with this. The Seahawks were just bad. Or, well, actually, the Packers were just bad at the end of the game, too. I don't know.
Right.
I'll say this. We're definitely going to get a closer game than last year, but, I mean, that's not exactly breaking news, folks. Let's be real. Anyway, so for the first time in a long time, we're kind of ending on time. All right. So for Stephen Weasel Hurley, a.k.a. Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Find him on Twitter, at Weasel the SOTG. Then coming out of Sumter County, fighting fires to protect us all, Chris Rankin, at Rankin the SOTG. And, of course, I am Kyle Nash, the student of the game, at the SOTG on Twitter. Check out the website, ngscsports.com. I'll have the Super Bowl preview up, detailing some of these matchups we talked about a little bit more in the Matchup Mania this week. The last one of the season, teardrops.
Mm-hmm.
But don't forget, the page is getting to be hyped for the draft. We got Draft Central going on up there, too. That's going to be a good time all the way around. Next week, we'll wrap up the game. We'll go through the commercials. We'll do what we do every year at the Super Bowl. And then when everybody leaves, I'm going to cry wondering what on earth my life will be without football. Well, I see I got my daughter now, so that helps. I'll hold her and I won't cry. It'll be great. Okay, anyways, that's enough of that crap. We'll see you guys next week. Happy Super Bowl, everybody. It is a national holiday after all. But until next time, class dismissed.